Welcome to today's deep dive. Imagine your landlord telling you that your best friend just isn't allowed to visit your apartment.
Yeah, that would be incredibly frustrating.
Right. And before 2007 in South Africa, fighting that was actually really difficult. So today, we're taking a deep dive into your notes and the official government gazette for South Africa's Rental Housing Amendment Act of 2007.
It's a really pivotal document.
It is. Our mission here is to unpack how this specific legal text fundamentally shifted the balance of power. We're translating dry legislation into the everyday reality of your housing right.
Because historically, I mean, signing a lease was a very one-sided transaction. You were literally living inside someone else's investment.
Yeah, exactly.
So this amendment is a fascinating piece of legislation because it actively reworks the mechanics of that relationship to, like, level the playing field.
Let's start with who actually gets through the front door.
Yeah.
The act explicitly expands anti-discrimination protections.
Yeah. Right.
Covering race, gender, pregnancy, sexual orientation, disability, and a whole lot more.
Right, and it used to be just about the person signing the lease.
Yeah, but now this amendment applies to prospective tenants, their household members, and even their visitors. Think of the leaseholder like a VIP at a club.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Thanks. So in the past, the bouncer, meaning the landlord, could just arbitrarily reject your guests. This act changes the rules so the bouncer can't use discriminatory reasons to block anyone in your entourage from entering.
What's fascinating here is how the act actually achieves this protection. It redefines the legal term, unfair practice, to include basically any practice unreasonably prejudicing the rights or interests of a tenant.
Wait, so just any practice?
Right. That specific phrasing creates this massive protective umbrella. The law essentially recognizes that your lawful enjoyment of a property is intrinsically linked to the people you invite into it.
Okay, so the act closes the loophole on who is allowed in the building. But landlords also used to find loopholes in the billing, right?
Oh, definitely. All the time.
Looking at the financial protections in these sources, the act mandates that landlords must put your deposit into an interest-bearing account, and you have the right to request written proof of that accrued interest.
Because, you know, that money belongs to you.
Exactly. Plus, any costs charged to you for the lease contract itself are strictly limited to the landlord's actual factual expenditure. And receipts have to be highly detailed now.
Yeah, specifying the street address, the exact period of payment, and whether the money is going toward rent, arrears, or the deposit.
But, okay, let's unpack this for a second. I mean, is it really necessary for national legislation to micromanage the printing costs of a lease agreement?
It sounds incredibly tedious, I know.
It really does. Like forcing landlords to track every single cent of ink and paper.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, legally limiting contract charges to factual expenditure is actually a targeted strike against arbitrary admin fee markups. It strips away those hidden profit centers for landlords. You aren't subsidizing their administrative overhead anymore. You are literally only paying what the paperwork actually costs to produce.
So without that strict factual expenditure clause, a landlord could just, like, invent a $200 document preparation fee just to pad their margins.
Exactly. The law basically uses tedious micromanagement to protect your wallet.
Well, keeping money in your pocket is great, but let's be real. Financial transparency doesn't mean much if a landlord decides to just change your locks because you're in a dispute.
Yeah, that's a very real fear for a lot of people.
And I see in the notes that the 2007 Act gives Rental Housing Tribunal some serious teeth here.
No, major teeth. Their rulings are now deemed equivalent to a magistrate's court order.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and landlords are explicitly banned from unlawfully locking you out, shutting off utilities, or seizing your possessions without a legal ruling. It tackles those self-help landlord tactics head on.
So a property owner can no longer unilaterally cut the water to force an issue. Yeah. So what does this all mean then? The tribunal gets magistrate-level enforcement power to stop those utility shutoffs and seize property, but the act specifically states they cannot hear eviction orders.
Right, that's a strict boundary.
I'm looking at this boundary and wondering why. I mean, if they have the power of a magistrate to enforce immediate rights, it seems counterintuitive to block them from handling evictions.
Well, this raises an important question about the severity of losing a home. The law intentionally separates everyday dispute resolution from the ultimate severe process of removing someone from their residence entirely.
Oh, so it's about the gravity of the situation.
Precisely. Evictions require the rigorous scrutiny of a formal court. The tribunal is there to keep the peace and enforce your immediate rights, not to authorize making you homeless.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And looking at the macro-level shift in how all of this is managed, the text outlines a major structural change. The Act moves the regulation-making authority from regional lawmakers, the provincial MECs, directly to the national minister.
Which is huge, because it standardizes housing protections across the board. It ensures that no matter where you live in the country, the rules of the game are unified under one national framework.
Closing off all those regional loopholes.
Exactly.
Well, next time you unlock your front door, take a second to think about the fact that your peace of mind isn't just guaranteed by the deadbolt. It's guaranteed by a few pages of a government gazette from 2007 that you've probably never read.